This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Nerds. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
This guy joins us right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Who the hell is this guy? It's Danny Cunningham from the Locked On Cavs podcast, the Inside Shot, Cleveland Magazine, 92.3 The Fan and 92.3thefan.com. Hello, Danny.
Good morning, Ken. How are you?
Oh, it's wonderful to hear you. You know what? I wasn't as upset. I know that some people, they drove around yesterday at 11 o'clock listening to the press conference, which we carried live on 92.3 The Fan, is seething. They were seething listening to that press conference yesterday. And I said, well, there's no reason to seethe. He's got to say these things. He can't sit there and say, we're going to trade all of them. Tell them to pack their stuff and get out of here. Couldn't say that then. But do you think that Kobe may have something up his sleeve for this offseason?
I think he has to. I think that the Cavs are going to have to look at least a little bit different next year. Last year, he got up there and said, you know, I don't understand why Jared Allen and Evan Mobley can't coexist. I don't understand why Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell can't work out together in the backcourt. And I certainly, I know a lot of people didn't take him at his word. I was one of them. I did not believe that would happen. And it did. But I also think it's worth reminding people that executives are not required to tell the exact truth in these press conferences. It does not matter if it's Kobe Altman, doesn't matter if it's Andrew Berry, doesn't matter if it's any other executive in any other sport. They're not required to detail their full and complete plans. I think that last year I expected there to be some change. There wasn't. I would be very surprised if there's not change to a certain extent, whether that is with the core group of players, whether that is on the edges. I think the Cavs will look at least a little bit different next year. I don't know if anything that Kobe said yesterday makes me feel stronger about that, but I just think when you kind of look at where they're at financially with what has happened, the fact they've lost the last 2 years in game five of the second round, I do think there needs to be some sort of change to the roster.
Well, the counterpoint that I'm mostly getting from fans who love the vibes and had such a great time all regular season, how could you not? They look like the best team in basketball or second best team the entire year, is that there's no more big bad Boston Celtics next year. Giannis could be heading to the West, who knows, with Philadelphia, and the Pacers and Knicks is not like some unmovable object. So why not just wait it out? Why not just run it back and attack it again next year and hope you're healthier?
I mean, all of those are fair points to make, but are you better by running it back? Like, I do think that there's a danger in saying, well, everybody else is going to get worse. We can say the same. I think that the Cavs need to be better in terms of who they are as a postseason group. They don't need to be better in the regular season. They've won 64 games. If they win 57 games next year. No matter what they look like, they're going to have Donovan Mitchell. They're going to have Evan Mobley. They're probably going to have Darius Garland. They're going to be a very, very good regular season basketball team that's going to win a lot of games, and none of it's going to matter because they need to win probably at least 12 games in the postseason for anybody to be happy with what happened. So does running it back mean that, yeah, we'll have the same regular season success, but where do we get better in the postseason? I think that is the question that they need to be asking all offseason, and I think that's the thing you have to look at is how is this team next year better suited to play playoff games than they were this year? And I do think injuries matter, and we probably have gone, I think, a little bit past the point of, well, injuries aren't an excuse to now they don't matter, which is just not true either. So I think that does need to be accounted for, but ultimately I think this team needs to be reshaped a little bit, and I would not be surprised if they made a significant move this offseason. I would not be surprised by that.
What is your definition of a significant move?
I think Jarrett Allen certainly qualifies. Somebody that is thought of to be part of the core. Although I did think it was interesting yesterday when Kobe was talking about internal development. And I don't know if this was done on purpose, but kind of reading between the lines, you wonder about this. He said, we're not counting out a 28-year-old Donovan Mitchell. We're not counting out a 25-year-old Darius Garland. We're not counting out a 23-year-old Evan Mobley. And in that answer, he mentioned those three guys. And I think that is what the core actually is. But he did not mention Jarrett Allen. And I thought that kind of said something without actually saying anything, if that makes sense. So I do think that if you make a significant move, he's the one to make. I think it could open up the roster in some interesting ways. Now, it's a very complicated time financially, being in the second apron, being a very, very expensive team that they're going to be. But that is the significant move I would look to make, and I think that's the significant move. If they do make one, that is probably the most likely.
The toughness angle of all this, we're joined by Danny Cunningham, covered the Cavs home and on the road throughout the season in the playoffs. So toughness, yesterday, just listening to Kobe Altman, sounded like he thought toughness can be developed over time. And there are examples of that in the NBA, but there are also a bunch of guys that never really get that, and sometimes you have to go get them. Where are you on the toughness debate?
I think that if this instance did not develop mental toughness for this group, I don't know that anything ever will. And I'm not sitting here saying that everybody on this roster is devoid of mental toughness, because that's just completely not true. But I do think that there are guys that is an area where it needs to grow, where I think they need to be better. And if this didn't do that, I don't know what will. And are you willing, as an organization, to take the gamble that this develops that? Because you're not going to realistically know until the postseason gets here. You're not going to know if the mental toughness has been developed during the regular season. I thought this team was plenty tough during the regular season, and then they get to the postseason and things are very, very different. So I do think that it's a gamble if you run it back and say, yeah, we are mentally tougher now because of what happened. It could be. I don't know. But I think if it doesn't happen now, I don't know that it ever will for some guys.
Do you believe that they can, like, a person can become tougher, that they can learn to be tougher?
I think you can learn through experiences, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that anybody that's not mentally tough is going to sit here and become LeBron James or Kobe Bryant in terms of those things. But I think that as a person, as a basketball player, you learn through your failures and you learn through your experiences. And I do think that those things that can help shape you can help you to move forward in that area. Again, I don't think that you're all of a sudden going to become this mental Iron Man, but I do think that you can grow.
Danny, the way that they talked about not only the physical toughness, but also mental, the mental side of things, is really hard. That's an abstract concept, I think, for many, especially just fans watching sports, listening on the radio or whatever. Like, what does that even mean? Kenny Atkinson brought it up. The players all brought it up. And then Kenny Atkinson at the end of the year talked about their program and, you know, the different ways that they measure all of this stuff and the data. But I do think it can get kind of hard. And if you think you can always develop something, then you'd never change your team ever. You would just keep your team every year and then just work on the points where you show deficits in the playoffs. But if you do that, you know, likely story is you're probably never going to win.
Yeah, I that's why I think that there need to be changes. That's why I think that they running it back as is, I do think would be somewhat of a mistake for this group, because they've finished essentially in the same, and not the same exact spot, but they've finished with some sort of disappointment in each of the last three postseasons. And Kobe Altman spoke to sort of what he viewed as the mental toughness, and he kind of pointed at the end of game two quite a bit during that press conference, if you listen. Like, he is very clearly not over that game, and he shouldn't be. I don't think anybody in that organization should be over what happened at the end of game two against the Pacers, but it's kind of a how come this hasn't been learned by now type of thing. Like, shouldn't the loss against the New York Knicks have delivered some mental toughness growth? And I'm sure it did. Shouldn't the win against Orlando have delivered some mental toughness growth? I think that the notion that they were ever going to do anything other than lose to Boston last year if healthy is a silly one, because that Celtics team was significantly better than the Cavs. But shouldn't that have delivered some growth in terms of the mental toughness? Then I think for them to fail in the way that they did, especially in game two, raises a lot of questions. And the fact that the series was kind of lost in that game. And we didn't necessarily want to say it at the time, because you don't want to count a team out, especially a 64 win team that's not healthy and could be getting guys back. But the Cavs really never recovered from the moment that Tyrese Haliburton shot hit the bottom of the net at the end of game two.
Danny Cunningham joining us here on the show. For Donovan Mitchell, would they consult with him even in back channels ways about maybe moving one of the other three pieces around him in the core four?
I think that if you are making a big move, I think it would be silly to not talk to Donovan Mitchell about it, because he's still the best player on this team. And I think it would probably be silly to not talk to Evan Mobley about it at least a little bit too. Not saying that Evan has the same level of power. He's not the same caliber of player Donovan Mitchell is yet, but the Cavs very firmly believe that he's going to be. I think he's going to be somebody that makes first team All-NBA at some point. They've put a lot on his shoulders. I thought that was evident yesterday. And I do think that you need to at least consider talking to those guys when you're when you're making big moves. Not saying that their opinions are going to drive the decision-making, but I also don't think that you want to blindside either of your superstars if you do make some sort of roster-shifting move. I think that's a bad thing too. So there has to be some sort of balance there, yeah.
What if that move includes Evan Mobley, Danny? Like, maybe Mobley for Giannis. Would you make that move?
I would make that move. That move is not going to be made. I think it's much, much more complicated than just saying, you give us Giannis, we'll give you Evan Mobley. That is, I will say, that's about the only available guy that I would trade Evan Mobley for. And I think every team in the NBA would do that, including Milwaukee. But that is not happening. I would be...
Well, if Milwaukee would do it, why wouldn't it happen?
Because there are a lot of complications that need to happen. And I also think, in terms of like the financial ramifications, this would essentially mean the Cavs would have to lose almost everybody off their roster other than Mitchell, Garland, and Giannis to get under the second apron. And then they would have to have and DeAndre Hunter, and then they would have to fill out the rest of the roster, so the other seven spots essentially with veteran minimum guys. And I just do not think that is a way to build a basketball team. I do not think that is something that is going to happen. And I also think Milwaukee probably wants quite a few draft picks, and the Cavs don't have the ability to do that because Donovan Mitchell is on the roster and all of the Cavs draft picks are now with the Utah Jazz. So I don't think that move is going to happen. However, that is like the only one I would consider trading Evan Mobley for in a vacuum. I think that highly of him that, you know, if Giannis is on the table, okay, let's talk. But that is not going to be something that we see happen, no.
Seven different NBA champions in 7 years. Good for the league or bad for the league?
I think it's good for the league because I do think that they need to start having some other stars find a way to become household names, right? Like, how long has this LeBron, Steph, KD era gone on? It's been forever, so much so that we kind of missed the Giannis, Jokic, Embiid era, right? Like, that era doesn't exist because LeBron, Steph, and KD were so good for so long. Those guys aren't going to play forever. They're probably on, like, the 17th hole of their careers, to put it in golf terms. They need other guys to step up and be stars. They need SGA to be somebody that is a household name. They need Anthony Edwards to step up and be somebody that could be considered the face of the league. Having the New York Knicks good is always good for the league. Tyrese Halliburton's a phenomenal player. Having him become a household name would be a really good thing for the league, especially considering the style of basketball that Indiana plays that I think is a very fun style to watch. I think it is good for the league if you have different teams. And truthfully, let's also, you know, the NBA wants to be the NFL in some ways. And I think the parity is a way where they would like to be the NFL, where you feel as if your team, if you're anywhere near decent, has a chance. That might not always be true, but you want the fans to feel that way. And I think this helps to accomplish that.
Danny, thank you for the time.
Anytime, guys.
Danny Cunningham, Locked On Cavs podcast, the Inside Shot on Substack, 92.3 The Fan, Cleveland Magazine. Follow him on Twitter at The Real D Cunningham.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Nerds. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Jeff, there are a number of things that I'm wondering that Kobe's going to talk about. I want to get to them in a second because there are two different ways I want to go here. One, I cannot tell you the number of texts and messages about trying to get LeBron to come back to Cleveland for the third time around. So I want to dive into that for a second. Only because it's preposterous. Like, I just don't see it happening.
Well, why is it preposterous?
I don't see it happening. I just don't see that scenario playing out, especially, and I think this is why. Because both you and I know that this franchise, and maybe this is something we'll hear today without actually having him say the words, took great pride in rebuilding this organization in post-LeBron 2. And, you know, they pulled off a fantastic regular season, for whatever that's worth, right? They've done their due diligence and hard work to try to get to where they are right now, and hopefully they'll get farther. I'm hoping that when this thing's all said and done, that we're all going to sit here and just say, okay, they ran into a really, really hot Indiana team, and they were dealing with injuries, and that's the reason why they weren't able to get by Indiana this year. And then look at Indiana. They went on to win the NBA championship. That's the kind of a little bit of the reason why I'm rooting for Indiana. And I hope that that's the way it plays out. But, I can't tell you the texts and the debates about LeBron, bring LeBron back. Let's get LeBron. LeBron 3.0. This would be a Hollywood ending. Get him to come back. It's all the difference in the world. Jeff, I just don't see it. Do you?
I would be really surprised. And you just laid out why. This organization has taken great pride in moving forward and building something without LeBron. I understand that. It's not only easy, I think it's factual, Andy, to say that the great successes of the franchise previously were because LeBron was on the team. It wasn't because, you know, it's because LeBron was born in Akron, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you got lucky getting the first round pick, the number one overall pick to get him. That was great. And then he decided he wanted to come back for a while. And that was great. And we all enjoyed that.
But we knew that Dan and LeBron had to make up for that to happen and have some kind of working relationship.
They had to have a meeting of the minds at some point. Or they had to put up with each other, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah, I'm
so. You know what I mean?
And maybe I'm
one of the only, I can't imagine they're great pals.
Well, it's hard for me to think about like one of the best moments in this city's history, the day of the parade, and then the stage. And clearly there was no love lost between the two of those guys up on stage. Well, and I don't even know if it was so much Dan. LeBron didn't go out of his way to recognize Dan. And did he have to? I don't know. LeBron's the one that did a lot of the work on the floor, but so did Kyrie and so did Kevin and so did, you know, did everybody on that team. So I for some reason, that's the lasting impression I think I will always have of their relationship, was that it just seemed cold during one of the greatest days in Cleveland sports history as far as, you know, being able to participate in the parade. And we all said, can't wait to have a parade. Can't wait. You know, like that was the biggest thing. And like, I just didn't feel like they left on great terms when it was all said.
I have no idea. And I didn't draw anything from what happened at the parade involving that.
Yeah. It was the ceremony that was over at, over there.
I didn't draw anything from it. Hmm. All I know is this. They're real proud of themselves, and they should be, for rebuilding a team, you know, without LeBron. And I would be surprised, real surprised, if the powers that be in the organization would want to bring back LeBron and everything that comes with him. And I mean that in many good ways,
mm-hmm.
but it's the only bad way is if you're an organization and you're looking to run your own organization and not have it be dominated by one guy, especially a guy who's, 40 years old now, 41? But let me throw this thought to you.
I also have another piece to this, too, that from LeBron's point of view, I'm like, why would he do this?
All right, well, let me throw one other thing at you, though.
Mm-hmm.
Even at the age of 40, whatever, is he 41? I think he'll be 41
Christmas.
In Christmas. Mm-hmm. Even at the age of 41, you drop him on this team and I think you're the favorite to win the NBA championship. With the core four. You don't have to move the guards if you don't want to.
All right, so here's my point.
LeBron can opt out.
Right.
He could come here for absolute vet minimum.
That's the problem.
He's not going to do that.
Yeah, that's why. If I'm LeBron James, why am I doing that?
Exactly right.
Unless you believe in the storybook ending of having LeBron come back a third time. Every section of Star Wars had three parts to it. So maybe
And I say this with admiration. You think LeBron's going to leave money on the table?
No.
I don't either.
Why would you?
Nor should he.
Yeah.
Nor should he. Even at his age, is he the biggest draw in the NBA? Is he still the focal point of the league? It drove me nuts. I got to tell you how many times I turned off Lakers games because I don't want to see them. They're not very good. Can I quote Charles Barkley on that?
Sure.
Charles would just get all over ESPN all the time. Why are they showing the Lakers all the time? They're not very good. Well, Charles is going to be working with them. But that's going to be fun. I agree. I can't tell you how disgusted I was time after time after time after time this winter, turning on ESPN. Oh, look, it's the Lakers. Oh, look, it's the Warriors. Okay, great. I get to see Steph Curry again. I love Steph. The Warriors were a mediocre to decent basketball team this year. The Lakers were a decent to pretty good basketball team this year. And then they got Luka. So, you know, they're really going to be front and center. I would be really surprised if LeBron actually wanted to come back. Next year, he'll have been in Los Angeles with the Lakers longer than he was his first go-round in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Next year will be his eighth year with the Lakers. I don't think he's going anywhere.
So I can't tell you how many conversations I had about that over the weekend. I'm like, can we let this go? And it's all because...
No, you know why? Think about it from a basketball standpoint. Andy, he'd be great team.
But there's the reality standpoint great. On this, too. The financial standpoint on it.
I know.
The organizational standpoint on it that you so eloquently talked about just now. I just don't see it. Could it happen? Sure, anything can happen. But I just don't see it happening.
I don't either.
And then there was another point that I want to bring up just as we talk about the Cavaliers in the future. Again, Kobe Altman's press conference coming up at 11 o'clock. You'll be able to listen to the whole thing. You said something this morning on the call that I thought was super interesting. And it's not about it's about it's a first. That you want to keep a team together or do you want to dismantle a team? And I thought you made a good point. I'll let you make the point. I don't want to.
I don't know that dismantling is the right word, but you know, you might think, well, you were so close. Let's roll it back. Let's roll it back, like they did last year, Andy.
Yeah.
And you changed coaches.
Yeah.
That was your big move. That was your main big move last year.
Mm-hmm.
You changed coaches, and what happened?
You had a fantastic regular season. Fantastic.
Absolutely. And then you got knocked out in the second round, just like you did with the coach that you thought you needed to make a change from to get past the second round.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I say that. I'm the guy who said J.B. Bickerstaff did a great job here and got him better every year. And I also thought he needed to change his offense. And Kenny Atkinson came in, changed the offense. Defense wasn't as good. Defense was atrocious against the Pacers. And they get smoked. Injuries, yes, I know. But end result is the end result. So what's that leave? You changed coaches. You hired the coach of the year, and the guy you fired was number two. Okay, so you had good coaching through all of this. You got some pretty good players on the team. What's the next step? Roll it back and tweak it, or make a major move? Four teams left in the NBA right now that are still playing basketball.
Yep.
Two of them made a huge trade with each other last year. Huge. Knicks picked up Karl Anthony Towns. Pretty dang good. Gave up a very, very good NBA player in Julius Randle. Dante DiVincenzo as well. Keita Diop, not Jop.
Right.
Keita Bates Diop from Ohio State, who got cut by Minnesota. But Minnesota gets rid of Cat, and you think, wow, really? Really? He went to the Knicks. He was great there. Fit in very nicely. And Randall goes to Minnesota. He's good there. And those two teams are still playing basketball. And they made a huge move.
It's interesting how it benefited
their rosters.
Both, everyone benefited from the moves.
Both teams are better because of it.
Hmm.
At least it would appear that way because you don't have the Rudy Gobert, Karl Anthony Towns maybe getting in each other's way. And Randall's a really nice fit there.
All right, what can the Cavaliers learn from the four teams that are left? The Knicks and Pacers, the Thunder, and the Timberwolves. What can the Cavaliers learn from that? And what are we going to learn from Kobe Altman coming up at 11 as that press conference rolls right here on 92.3 The Fan. We'll be able to hear every word he has to say, because I know there are people saying, well, trade this, get this guy, go after this guy. Maybe they need to tweak this. Maybe they don't. Maybe some people are actually thinking that they should stand pat and move forward and see what this thing looks like a year from now when they're not as banged up, if they can get past the second round. And maybe they just had a bad draw this year. So Coby Altman will speak 11 o'clock. You'll be able to hear it right here on 92.3 The Fan. Baskin and Phelps.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Nerds.
Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Jeff, other points that you wanted to make from the press conference?
I think Kobe's done a really nice job of putting this team together. They have some real talent. I wonder, you know, I look at the guys toward the end of the bench and other guys and wonder, okay, who is there who can help me? You know, I personally have liked the little bit that I've seen of Jalen Tyson. I've had other people who are pretty in the know tell me that he can't play.
Really?
Yep. I don't know that I believe that. I haven't seen
enough to make that determination.
Well, I haven't either. Yeah. I like what I've seen. I've had others who are in the know tell me that they don't think he can play. So I jury's out. We'll see. And, you know, the internal growth and everything. And you know, I'm the president of the Evan Mobley fan club, right? I don't think there's any question. I think he has some real ability. And Kobe's talking about the high usage, and I immediately gravitate towards shots. Dan said it's about touches and passing and everything else. Dan's right about that, except the only thing for Evan that really went up this year was his scoring by a little less than 2 points per game. Excuse me, a little less than 3 points per game. Mm-hmm. He jumped from 15.7 to 18.5.
Significant.
That's a nice step.
Yeah.
Yeah. His shot went up 1.8 from last year. He took almost two more shots per game.
Okay.
I just want to turn this guy loose. Let's see if there's something there. Because
but his, do you want them to design more plays for him, or what are you saying?
Well, part of it has to be on him.
Yeah.
You know, he has to demand the ball, get the ball, and do something with it. But his field goal percentage was down just a little bit. His three-point percentage from this year to last was basically the same, a little bit down. Free throw percentage, about the same. Rebounding, same. Assists per game, exactly the same. Blocks per game, barely up. In other words, other than taking 1.8 shots and scoring 2.8 more points per game, he had the same year with J.B. Bickerstaff and with Kenny Atkinson. Offensively, anyway, at least as far as the numbers go. I want to see the guy take 16 shots per game. And I don't think that's going to happen as long as you have two ball-dominant guards taking plenty of shots per game. And it was down with Donovan this year. He took fewer shots. Darius took a similar number of shots. And I like both of those guys. It's just about the fit for me. And if you can adjust the fit and say, hey, Darius, we want Evan to take about 16 shots per game rather than 12.8. And we want you to take about 12.8. Can you boost your assists 3 or 4 per game? Because we think that will make us a better team. And to me, that's how you grow from within. I just don't think Evan's ever going to bust loose when your top two scorers and your top two shot takers are two small ball-dominant guards.
Jeff is in University Heights. Hi, Jeff.
My own thought. Yep.
Good morning,
hi,
guys.
Jeff.
Good morning.
So we're going to run it back with the core four again.
So it okay. sounds like, does it? Is that what you?
Yeah, that's what it sounds yeah. like.
That's what it sounds like.
But Jeff, he's not going to tell us otherwise in a press conference. But he sure sounded confident about it, didn't he?
Yes, he did. That's true. Now, Jeff, I agree with you about Evan. I'd like to see him take 20 shots a game. I'd like to see the offense, excuse me, run through him. And to a point earlier about Craig Porter Jr., Craig Porter Jr., yes, is a better defender. He can handle the ball and all that. And he's a better defender than Garland, but he's also 6'2".
That's correct.
So you yep. still stay short and you lose offense. We're stuck unless, and this isn't going to happen, but unless you move Allen and Garland for Giannis, which isn't going to happen, that's fantasy land. So we're stuck with this, unfortunately, because we don't have draft picks to trade. And our tradable assets are the guys that I just mentioned, but then are you going to get equal value back for them? So I see this perpetual cycle. Guys, I hope that I'm wrong, but I'm not real high on Garland and Allen. I mean, I think they're good players. I just don't think they're championship-type players. If and until Evan Mobley becomes the best player on the team, if and until the offense is run through Evan Mobley, this team is not going to win a championship. I'm convinced of that. Now, they can go out and prove me wrong next year, and I'll be the first to call your show and gladly say I was wrong. But you're right, Jeff. You think about it. The last time a team won an NBA title where the best player on it was a 6'2", maybe 6'3" guard, where the bad boy Pistons was Zeke. Zeke was 6'1".
Yep.
AI got to the finals, but they didn't win. After that, there is no team that has won a title that has even got to the finals, albeit that Sixer team with AI, where your best player is a 6'2 guard. Today's NBA, and the comparison to the Celtics is not a good one to me, because their two best players were 6'8 and 6'9. That's who they built their core around.
Yep.
They weren't building around two undersized guards. So we're stuck with this.
All right, Jeff, thank you. Appreciate it.
At least that's the situation now. You know, and can you change it and, you know, make a trade? Sure, you can. Can you take this and make it better? I would assume you can, Andy. But I honestly think there needs to be a shift in the slight pecking order of who's taking shots and who you're, like Jeff said, who you're running things through. I don't know that you have to run the offense through Evan, but to me, Evan and Donovan need to be your top two guys, man, your top two scoring options. And Darius, I don't even want to say complimentary role, just needs to play point guard. If you didn't have Donovan there, and let's say Max Strus was your starting two guard, okay, then maybe I want Donovan or Darius shooting a lot more. But Max isn't your starting two guard.
No.
You know, you've got a guy who's ball dominant playing two guard. I mean, ball dominant. Took at least 25 shots in every playoff game he played in against Indiana, or he played the full game. He's going to take shots. And if Darius is going to get shots, well, then that puts everything in your backcourt. And I just don't think that's the way to win big.
Not to let facts totally get in the way of the argument that Steph Curry guy's waving in the corner on 6'2 guards who've won titles and were the best players on their team.
Oh, that's true. Mm-hmm. But he didn't have a 6'2 guard in the backcourt with him.
No, just wanted to make sure it was known that, hey, that Steph Curry guy still plays basketball and he's 6'2.
He still had some pretty good players around him, too.
Those Warrior teams were unbelievable.
My point has always been...
It was just to Jeff's point in the whole nobody under 6'2".
It was Jeff in University Heights where he said the best player.
Yeah.
My point has always been, show me a team with two ball-dominant guards in the backcourt who are shorter. And the only team that I could think of that won with those two as their key guys were the Bad Boy Pistons with Isaiah and Dumars.
Right. Kevin, Chicago Falls. Hi, Kevin.
Kevin.
Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Good, how are you?
Nice phone line.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, yeah. Listen, I'm not going to disagree with anything that's been said so far. I agree with, obviously, the injuries were the injuries, and they are what they are, and whatever. And I certainly, you know, well, I'm sure we all of us Cavs fans, certainly hope Mobley can take another step forward and improve. That'd be great. That'd be fantastic and all that. But I haven't heard anything, and I've been waiting to throw this out. To some degree, I think Carlisle was playing chess and Akin was playing checkers, right? I mean, we had the one game where we switched over to the zone and that worked well. But the very next game, then Carlisle immediately made changes to go against that. And we didn't do anything back on that. And there were times when I was watching the game where Carlisle was only watching the subs coming in. And he would immediately call guys' names out to match up who we were putting in. And I think we talked of, he exploited the Jared Allen guarding way out on the 3-point line over and over and over again. We made no adjustments. So certainly our players can make an improvement. I agree with that. I'm sure we can step forward, but I think our coaching staff could also make some improvements as well. And I think they could go back and watch these games and find some moves Carlisle made that were excellent moves and end up getting them, partly was one of the reasons why they got the win they got. Great adjustments. He did a phenomenal job. And I don't think he's getting the credit of a coach. I know I'm not hearing it out there, but I think he did a phenomenal job.
Coaching. Yeah, we said it right away. I mean, I thought the same thing, that he just didn't. He did what I think Kobe said today about being battle tested and understanding the physicality and understanding about how to push the Cavaliers offense all the way in the backcourt to make it so you can't, you know, get the ball over the timeline in efficient fashion, and to be able to have all those knowledgeable things that you understood, that even if your roster, if you didn't think your roster was better than the other team on the other side, that you could get the most out of them by using the coaching ability to put them in a position to win. And that's what happened. Yeah, I think we agree on that, Kevin, that's what Carlisle did. He put his team in a position to win, and when he needed the big shot, he got it from the big guys.
Well, and not just that, Andy, I agree with that, but also let's give him credit for putting an offense together. You don't shoot 50% by luck.
No.
There were guys with wide open looks. So their offense was running so well that guys were getting complete wide open looks, and no one from the Cavs was even getting a face in the hand, no face guard, nothing. We were 5 feet away from these guys as they were taking the shots. So of course they were shooting 50%. So, I tip my cap to Carlo. I think he did a great job. I think he played chess against us, and, you know, I guess, you know, honor the guy, tip the cap, give him his dues. He did a great job, and so did Indiana. So hopefully
Thank
we can
you,
win.
Yep.
next year.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. Good call. Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate it. 216-474-0092. Let's come back. We'll talk a little bit more about the Cavaliers. Might even talk a little baseball, too, as the Guardians had a rough weekend down in Cincinnati. Jimmy Watkins, Cleveland.com, next.
I can't get a win today, can I, Mac?
Oh.
I tell him the sky is blue, and we got a five-minute discussion about how it's purple today.
Please share your work.
Listen to the 2.5 hours of the show, I think, is the work.
I don't think that's showing the work.
All I said was okay.
Felt like there was some attitude there.
Maybe there was. You know what? Maybe there was.
Radu saying that he's still upset.
Mac, does he have a school event to go to or no?
I mean, I'm not sure. I don't know. Oh. He might have one that Mac comes called up for
the
school.
Mac was loving you being off yesterday, by the way. Yeah, he was loving it. Anytime Spencer messed up or did anything, Mac was right on it.
Yeah.
He could not wait. He was playing the role that I think he's desperately always wanted to play, but then just couldn't.
There were a couple of times where he pushed the line a little bit
Of Nick Wilson?
I think he was trying. Yeah, I think he was trying.
So I have noticed, love you, Mac. I have noticed that when I make a joke, Mac will come in and try and backfill with a joke by restating the joke. And then it's like, we're on to the next one, right? That happened a lot with the Shaq K thing. It's okay. You don't realize it. You're proud of your papa. It's okay. We're a team. But Radu, tweeting out that he shows the 2020 draft board, Isaac Okoro being drafted 5th, Tyrese Halliburton being drafted 12th, saying still upset with this image. I think if we're going to do the Tradio
revisionist
history,
we can't do that.
The one that should really piss you off is Colin Sexton going 7th or 8th and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander going 10th.
As long as Jokic got drafted in a Taco Bell commercial, we just can't play that game.
Oh, because everything looks dumb compared to that?
And everyone said this guy isn't good at basketball.
Well, they watched him walk, I think.
Sky is blue, and you're telling me it's purple.
No.
You could have just said, yeah, you're right there, Jonathan.
Good point. Shouldn't we give the whole... He doesn't look like an NBA superstar. Like, we all agree that there's a prototypical level of athleticism, how it looks. Jokic does not look like that. Jokic looks like me with skill. He's a big Eastern European. He's just a big dude.
You're letting looks get in the way here, huh?
That's exactly what the NBA draft is, I would imagine.
Okay.
Don't you agree?
Yeah, wasn't
trying to build a bridge.
Zion was big.
Well, yeah, but
Zion also had an eating problem, and we all knew it.
Well, he was also 6'6", 270 pounds, and one of the most explosive athletes ever.
What do you think Jokic is? Jokic is taller.
Yeah, but he's not an explosive athlete. He had skill, but he didn't have... I mean, he still doesn't have an up.
Sky is blue. It's purple today.
You just compared Nikola Jokic to Zion Williamson.
No, you tried making the case that looks alone is the only thing that dictates they go.
Well, not just looks, but how you move. Like how it looks when you move. That I'm not saying physically he's a Bratislav in 7. I'm not saying that. I'm saying physically when you watch them move. Like even now, if you said Nikola Jokic was the 54th pick and you just show him running up and down the court, you'd be like, yeah, that one makes sense. Zion was, I'll go down and swinging on this one. Zion's still one of the most impressive college specimens I've ever seen.
But yeah, no one debated the athleticism part of it. You added that onto after the part of the conversation started.
No, that's the point I was making, though.
I missed your point then.
I think you did. It's okay.
That's all right.
You all right?
Yeah.
Feeling better now? Feel like, do we build a bridge to Trust Town?
Can we make fun of Mac again?
What? I was going to say, that sounded a little condescending there from you.
Oh.
Did it, Mac?
Just a bit.
Did it sound condescending?
Just a bit.
Are you sure? You figured that one out? See, that was condescending. Yeah.
Now, what he did before, too, was also condescending, but that's either here nor there.
That was much worse.
That was neither here nor there.
That was much meaner.
It was also condescending, yeah.
216.
Boy, we had fun yesterday, didn't we, Mac?
And you're both welcome. 216-474-0092. Let's go with Mark in Cleveland. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
And I want to make two or three statements. First of all, please, somebody suspend Teddy Altman from making trades for the Cavaliers, because I want to make this statement. You mean the Cavs couldn't do what they did this year without Donovan? They gave up 8 players for Donovan. And Donovan, if he was any good, Danny Ainge would have never got rid of him. He got rid of him because, okay, you may not agree with me. But
I think it was the Teddy Altman thing that made me snark a little bit.
Yeah, because he did the same thing with Kyrie. What did he get for Kyrie? Nothing.
It was Kobe Altman.
Nothing. Kobe, whatever his name is. But you understand what I'm saying. He makes bad trades. And don't trade Garland, because before Mitchell got there, Garland was turning into the kind of point guard you would need. He scored 15, 16 points a game. He was around 8 or 9 assists a game. When Donovan got there, that's when he started going jumper happy, because Donovan was going jumper happy. Donovan is not a team player, because if I don't recall, Utah had the best record in the West 1 year with Donovan, and they went out, I think, in the first round again. So this is something that continues to happen with him. He's not the answer. Please get rid of Donovan. You can get more for him, and that's why he came to Cleveland, because wasn't nobody going to give the Cavs what wasn't nobody going to give up what the Cavs gave up to get Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell is not the answer for the Cavs. Mobley is the answer. He's the future of the Cavs. That's all I got to say.
Mark, we appreciate you. Thank you very much. I believe your burger's ready. Would you like to take this one, or would
no? This goes right with what you've been saying for 40 minutes.
Except the idea that the Mitchell trade is a bad trade is just patently absurd.
Well, yeah.
Like, the problem is not Mitchell or Garland. The problem is not Mitchell or Garland. It's Mitchell and Garland. It's having two guys who have similar needs to even in a balanced offense in the regular season, it bore fruit. It reared its head in the postseason. And just so we're clear, they gave up Colin Sexton, stank. They gave up Oche Agbaji, who I believe is on his third team by now or second team by now. They gave up Lauri Markkanen, who had a great year that first year, and now is averaging 19 points a game.
It's an all-star right there.
I believe they've won 60 games combined in the last 3 years, and they've given up, future first-rounders that might be the 28th pick in the draft. I'm willing here to say, like, you met me halfway, because you said the Evan Mobley thing, but then you said that, I mean, Donovan Mitchell, it's still one of the most successful trades in Cavs history.
Yeah. Your chance of sarcasm shirt is ringing true on that call.
Yeah. Yeah. I try. It was the Teddy Altman thing for me. That was you can't then be like, yeah, whatever. Like, you should know the guy's name if you're gonna criticize him. Do you like the Donovan trade? Do you think they should?
Yeah.
Would you go back in history?
That's where we're at on May 26th.
Unring that bell.
Do you like the Donovan trade? Yeah, I'm for the Donovan trade.
216-474-0092. Do you like the Donovan trade? The lead coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
I sent you the pictures over the weekend, by the way. I was in the Campbell Palooza, the beer pong tournament.
Yeah, seems like a terrific event.
Finished in the Elite Eight. That's where we went down. Out of the loser's bracket. And I ended up beating the...
You made it as far as the Cavs did.
I ended up beating the proprietor. Well, then I'm guessing I'm going to have to change out my partner again. Or he's going to have to change me out, one of the two.
You change your core?
Well, I took Brett, my buddy Brett, because he's going into the Hall of Fame this fall.
Well,
you
got to get rid of him now.
Got to upgrade.
Have him on your team because he's your friend.
I got to tell you, we both carried.
We're trying to win championships.
Go get
here.
A unicorn.
We both carried our weight.
Somebody that with such long arms that they could just drop it right in.
Oh no, there were people watching the elbows. They had refs. They had people in refs. So every year.
So they're enforcing the lane violations.
Yes.
Wow.
Every year, my buddy Scott puts on this big beer pong.
You should see
tournament.
The 2-minute report on this thing.
Which Liz didn't get the concept of. She goes, why is there water in the cups? I go, because that's disgusting.
Yeah.
And she goes, but how do you drink? I go, you just have beers. And then you drink the beers, but you just play beer pong. She goes,
she
did not know.
Even, what has happened to the once proud sport of beer pong?
When we were young we walked to the beer pong courts uphill
that's
both
right.
ways.
I used to have
alcohol in there.
How do we not get typhoid?
It was before beer pong was integrated, Anthony.
So. Yes, of course. Lord Almighty. But we played the beer pong tournament because he has a charity beer pong tournament every year. We went to the Elite Eight. I'd say we both pulled our own weight, and I was happy just because I beat the guy who the tournament was named after.
Yes, so, that's a huge victory.
It was a loud
Jonathan Beer
moment. Do you remember when the Cavs won the finals at Golden State and it was quiet except for the Cavs celebrating? That's the way it was.
Oh,
that's
man.
The way it was. It was stunned silence and us screaming at the top of our lungs. Everybody's just like, oh, Scott lost. Because it was Scott and his wife. who I graduated high school with. It's a great time. They do it right down in Perry. It's a good. It was a good event for everybody involved. And I hope he made a lot of money. Time. It was a good ass time for everybody involved. I hope they got a lot of money for the charity. It was a good time. Lima, you got to go with me next year. Hopefully, we won't have it on the same weekend as the marathon
weekend.
Well, this year was the marathon weekend. Last year, Mason was a newborn. You can't have any more kids.
No, I can't.
And as long as they don't have it on the same weekend as the marathon, we should be good to go. Don't tell me that you can't have the kids stopping you from going forever, okay?
What if it was game 7 of the Eastern semifinals?
With Giannis. Oh, my God.
I've muted all those.
Well, that's what we'll call him.
I knew as I was saying, see, this is where it's in my head now. I knew as I was saying the words, he's going to make a video of this, and I'm going to have to mute the conversation because to some people, you cannot move any of these pieces, or you're the biggest piece of garbage that has ever lived. And there's plenty of people who just keep telling me, Darius and Allen. Okay, man, if you have to ask yourself, when we do Tradio, if you were the Bucks, would you take Darius and Jared Allen for your Giannis Antetokounmpo? And you got to make the salaries match. So whoever, no. Guys, I don't know how else to tell you this. If you got a three-team trade, fine, maybe you could swing it. But then you ended up with Drew Holiday, like Bobby Marks said, which I know, I don't want Drew Holiday. Sorry, Tone, not interested. You got to trade someone of tremendous value. In Darius, he's good enough to give a max contract to, but he's not good enough to move to go get the wing you need. Sorry, guys, you're stuck. That's what I keep trying to say to everybody. I'm going to get to this clip here in a second about the Browns and about Shador. But I hate to be the bearer of bad news. I'm not trying to be the bastard here. You're nodding your head in agreement. You know I'm right about this. You have a 6'1 guard who is diminutive in size, who you can fuss with and mess with and get in his way, and he crumples. I'm sorry. He's just not big. He crumples. Who's trading for that? I don't know who's trading who's trading their elite wing for that? That's why it's a non-starter. So if you're going to give up, if you're going to get elite, you're going to have to give up the potential for elite. So if you want to package Jared Allen because you're mad at him, fine. But man, it's probably going to have to take the unicorn. And I'm not saying I would move Evan Mobley for anybody. But there is someone specific.
No,
I would.
That list.
I would. I got to admit.
That list that you would deal Evan Mobley for?
It's one person long right now. It's Giannis Antetokounmpo. That is it. Or, excuse me, if Denver was actually serious about moving on from Nikola Jokic, two people. That's who I'm willing to move him for, too.
Not Luka?
No, not Luka. And I'll tell you who else? Not LeBron James. Mark that down right now. Anything that has anything to do with an offseason, you're going to have to mention LeBron. So I'm going to say not LeBron James. So none of those names, I would do it for Nikola Jokic, and I would do it for Giannis Antetokounmpo, and that's it. So it's a tough spot to be in, guys. That's all I can tell you. And I know that I'm the biggest bastard today. Lima was the biggest bastard last week. We'll see what Nick and Jonathan say this weekend or this afternoon. I mean, that's about it. Kobe Altman's going to go out there and say that no moves are going to be made today at 11.
Well, he's going
whether
to...
Whether he means it or not.
He's not going to be wrong, but he's going to talk about the injuries and the impact.
Uh-huh.
And that has to be... Honestly, I know it's going to be called an excuse. It quite literally is something he has to talk about. He has to talk... He's going to be asked, why can't your guys make it to the finish line? And he's going to go through it and talk about how, these are unrelated or these... It's nothing to do with these guys being small or anything like that. He's going to probably be asked that a bunch of different ways. Can you count on these guys to get to the end of the season? But, injuries are going to come up. They're going to be a big part of it. And he's probably going to say that the hope is, like Atkinson said at the end of the year, that we get there healthy next year at this stage. Tough to win these games when you're not healthy. Just ask Golden State Warriors. Just ask the Nuggets. I mean, the Nuggets... Their guys played yesterday, but two of their studs or two of their big time role playing studs, they weren't healthy.
You remember Scott McLuhan
I do.
He is the former general manager of the Washington.
Okay, I gotta admit, I had forgotten about him until Friday.
Okay, well, he was a senior personal executive and general manager of the Washington Commanders back in the day when they were called by another name.
I tend to forget about ex-GMs.
Wasn't he a friend of the Browns?
He also was a consultant with the Browns after that. And I know that he went through some personal trials and tribulations, things of that nature. Still a guy that people like to bring on shows. Still a pretty interesting character. And he was on Afternoon Drive yesterday. He is a man who is head over heels on Shedeur Sanders.
I gave him a first-round grade, and I just don't throw those around like they're anything. I might give 12 to 15 a year at most. In my opinion, he was the best quarterback, when it's all said and done, in this draft. He had no running game. He had no offensive line, and the guy still produced big time. You know, they're like, well, he's not the great athlete. I'm like, well, who are you comparing him to? His dad? Of course not. But if you're comparing him to NFL quarterbacks, he's at least average. He's probably better than average. Just in his demeanor and his mentality, his throwing motion and his arm strength, and the fact that he's not a bad athlete. He's not. I'm telling you. You guys will find that out soon.
That's Scott McLuhan on Afternoon Drive. He is a fan of Shedeur Sanders. Said a lot of things in the media so far this last week. A lot have been making the rounds. Said that, you know, a lot of teams are going to be kicking themselves for passing on Shedeur Sanders. You know, I had a lot of people at that event on Saturday. I had a lot of people like, how do you feel about Shedeur? Honestly, come on. And I'm like, I feel the same way about Shedeur. I'm always afraid they're going to like whip out their phones and like do the Jerry Jones to me. Like I feel differently than what I say on the air. I go, guys, what I say on the air is the absolute truth. I think he's much better. I don't know if he was number two overall great. Don't know about that. But I don't know what he did in these interviews to fall to the fifth round. I don't know what he did. Because just by judging, like Zach, if you get Zach Jackson saying good things about you as a quarterback, you must be actually good. Because Zach goes out of his way to not, he only gives praise to those he feels who absolutely deserve it. He is the absolute opposite of me. I always have to walk back stuff because I get excited about guys. And Zach likes him. Zach thinks he's a good quarterback. And in Zach said he's the guy who looks like an actual NFL quarterback, where we've had a lot of guys here in this town who haven't looked like actual NFL quarterbacks. And that's all Zach's tried to say. And Zach's right about it. Seeing him last week, I think that there is something there to him. That's why it makes me that much more convinced that, yeah, I'm a big fan of Joe Flacco, man. But I think that the closer we get to it, I think that they'll start to go towards Kenny Pickett. And then they'll go towards Shedeur Sanders and Dylan Gabriel. And you know what? I'm willing to say in that order. Now, I know that Dylan is smart. I know that he is a grown man. There's a lot of maturity there. That's something that an organization, you can fart in its general direction, but that's what an organization like this needs. You need some maturity at that position. You need some understanding at that position. If Shedeur can harness things, yeah, I would put Shedeur ahead of Dylan Gabriel right now. And of all the controversial things we've said this morning, I don't think that's controversial whatsoever. So everybody asked, I mean, down there, it was the number one question. What do you really think of Shedeur? I'm like, guys, he's a good quarterback.
Do you think it's 100% a fair competition, or is it weighted by where they were taken in the draft?
Because
it's not like Gabriel was a first-round pick. A first-round pick is going to be given way more,
you know what? Maybe,
leeway, right?
Maybe going into it, but I think if you're going to evaluate this the correct way, neither of them are first-round picks. I think you have to take off the label of third-round pick and fifth-round pick to do an honest evaluation between these two. If it were a first-round pick, there's no honesty involved. That's a major, major investment that you've made. You're going to give him every single possibility to be the number one guy from the word go. You're going to do that. You know how organizations work. You guys all know this. But since one was a third-round pick and one was a fifth-round pick, I think by the time they started throwing footballs around on Friday, I think that that's where it ended. Once they walked onto the field, they're all just rookies. And now I think you have to discuss whether or not they're right and ready to go as rookies. And when it comes to the maturity issue of it, I mean, they've both played a lot of football. When it comes to the maturity issue of breaking down a whiteboard and breaking down an offense, maybe Dylan would have that edge right now. Just because of what I've heard, the whiteboard stuff and the meeting stuff before. But that's just based on things that you hear hearsay. But from what you see, hey, Shedeur can throw it. And there's obviously a big package of everything else that goes with a guy like that.
I wanted to make sure I had this stat right because I had written this down last night when thinking about this and going through offensive rating. This is one metric. It is by no means the end-all be-all, but it is one way to gauge a player's performance. A plus 110 or plus is considered good in the NBA. 120 or plus is considered elite offensive production.
Mr. Analytical in the NBA. Over here. Look at you.
The first four letters of that, the very least.
The guys, analysis. Yeah, the guys you disdain. You've now become. You live long enough to become the people you hate.
But wait for it. So plus, so 120 plus is considered to be elite. Do you know what Evans' offensive rating was in these playoffs?
I'm going to guess 130.
138.
Okay, it's very good.
That's so to me what that says is when his attempts per game, his field goal attempts per game drop by 2 field goal attempts per game. That didn't happen for Darius, it didn't happen for Donovan, that happened for your focal point or who should be your focal point. And if we were looking for encouragement, right? I know everybody just wanted him to slam the door shut. Nope, I'm here, I'm Evan, I'm the new Giannis, I'm the new Kevin Garnett. That's not how this works. Yep, you need a player to make the most out of his opportunities, and that's the thing that you gauge whether that guy is worthy of the opportunities and more opportunities moving forward. You've got enough here. You make a case he was, from offensive rating purposes, he was one of your 2 best offensive players in the playoffs. So why not do the logical thing of giving him more to do instead of just saying, well, Evan has to ask for it. I think that, to me, is a cop-out, if that's the way Kobe Altman's thinking.
And I don't know that he is. I mean, at no point of that press conference did he make the suggestion that it's on Evan to ask for more touches.
Actually, he did. At one point, he said, Evan has to ask for more touches, specific
to
the
Indy series. I didn't hear that
part. Did he? He did, and it upset
me when I heard
it.
Why would Evan call for it?
Well, no, so I think there's an idea of Evan has to demand the ball more. The reality is that he's put in a catch 22.
I mean, at some point, that's on Atkinson to be like, I'm the coach and I'm the person that I'm gonna make sure that this happens.
But I think it's a wholesale organization thing. You have to embrace Evan as the, and I don't want to say focal point because it's not like Donovan's going away.
Well, so no, Donovan was part of the problem in this. And this is something I railed on a little bit yesterday. That idea and that, and again, I mentioned it a million times. I'll mention it again. In the fourth quarter, with 1 minute left in the fourth quarter, the final 13 previous possessions all ended with Donovan Mitchell either taking a shot or going to the free throw line. Like, so was he suggesting that he needs to ask for the ball from Donovan? Is that the suggestion there?
I think he's saying,
it sounds like that's the suggestion you're making.
I think when he's saying when they're in the huddle, I think when he's saying when they're in a play.
That sounds very much like 5 guys playing against 5 guys in like pickup basketball. It's like, well, why didn't you get the ball today? It's, well, I never asked Jack to throw me the ball.
I just think
it's the NBA.
So I think there's some validity to the idea of, hey, Evan, understand you're the second best player, first best player, whatever you want to call him here. But he has to be empowered to be that. And he's not when you have 2 high usage guards who also happen to be undersized. And I hate that there's an obvious odd man out. I'm going to tell you right now, Evan will never be the player he needs to be if you've got Donovan and Darius jostling for shots.
Well, the two of them aren't just going to give it up. Maybe is that what Kobe's trying to get at?
Well, no.
Like the two of them aren't going to give it up, so it's on Evan, which I don't know how he thinks it's on Evan at that point, but it's on Evan to just be more vocal and say, I want the ball more?
I mean, I think that's part of it. I also think whether he means to or not, it's a math problem that the Cavs themselves have. Every organization does this. Like this idea that a tree grows equally to all parts here. Trees have to be pruned. This championship tree that is the Cavaliers, you need to Miyagi it. You need to clip the right wings. And that does mean you have to, and I'm going to switch my bad analogies. It does mean you have to break a couple eggs to make a more perfect omelet. It's going to have to happen. But if you don't do it this offseason, at some point you're holding Evan back. And Cavs, I understand it's hard to see it because,
well, at some point you won't have Donovan and you'll need him to be the best player.
Well, at which point,
will he have done enough?
Will he have
gone through the ringer enough?
Honestly, at which point do you stymie a guy's development? You can hold players back from greatness by not giving them the opportunities they need. This is not an anti-Darius sentiment. It's sure
as hell
not.
I just don't know why it falls on Evan to be the one that like has to call for the ball in that moment.
I mean,
that just seems kind of, if Kobe said that, that seems awful to me.
I mean, I he didn't just put it on him, but he did say the phrase, Evan's got to call for it more. And my response is, how much more can you call for it by making 42% of your threes in the playoffs? By when you do get the ball, you just go ham on everyone's ass, especially in that game four. Like, how much more can you call for it?
Mobley's usage rate was incredibly low relative to the talent that he has.
Yes.
I mean, his usage rate was 17.6. That's sixth in on the Cavs for the postseason.
Yeah, which now, shouldn't be. He should be your first or second best. Or, sorry, his usage rate should be first or second for the Cavs going forward.
Part of me does wonder how much of that was Evan just having a trust in what the offense was during the regular season.
Well, no. I think the problem is, Evan's a great teammate.
And in turn, that goes with everyone else, too. Like, I mean, like there's a tug and a pull that's happening within my brain here right now. I can acknowledge the idea that Evan Mobley is the future. And Evan Mobley, you want to see him take that ascension, and you want to see him be the very best. The other side of me, though, does suggest, well, during the regular season, this was one of the best offenses of all time. And so how do I just ignore that? And I get you want to put Evan's development ahead of anything, but if it ain't broke, don't fix it in many ways.
No,
the problem that happened is you woke up 5 games later.
I mean, the Celtics were in the NBA Finals in 2022. They could have easily said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And instead, they broke it. They traded Marcus Smart. They traded pivotal guys around them, brought in Kristaps Porzingis, brought in Drew Holiday.
But the difference there wasn't them just saying, okay, Tatum, you're taking more shots now.
Well,
the suggestion
they fundamentally changed their offense.
Okay, but what
they said,
the
we need to go to the three ball on steroids. That's the point. They had something they could have just run back and just, well, we're really good. We're in the playoffs. Let's see if it breaks for us next year. They didn't.
Well,
they broke the damn thing, and it led to the first championship since 2007.
You're right, but your suggestion is go to Mobley, which is going to give Mobley more opportunities and attempts, which would be, I mean, yes, it's a different offense, but you're veering away from this three-point ball on steroids that you just talked about.
You can still do it because he also should probably take, now that he's shown he can do it for three-point attempts per game,
I mean, the reality,
and be good,
time
for 5 3-point attempts per game.
Team that not enough people want to acknowledge that this team really turned into a make or miss 3-point team in many ways.
And by the way, I don't think that's a bad thing.
I don't either.
Pacers are this on steroids.
If you give it to Mobley this way, you are in many ways moving away from that.
Yep, and that might be the way the NBA is going with the fact that you're seeing even Boston's going to be moving away from this. Boston, the team that said we're going to start jacking up 53s a game, they're moving away from it. If they trade Drew Holiday and or Derek White, you're going to put all those 3-point attempts on.
I think they're still going to do that. Yeah.
Jaylen Brown, I think they're going to have to change their offense. Well, you saw it when they lost Tatum. They changed their offense. 216-474.
Jacked up a ton of threes. What are you talking about?
0092. It was not the same way because they focused on defense. Ironically, they did what Indy did in the second half of the season.
They still launched a ton. The 3-point game is not going away. Problem still exists.
It's not going away, but it does not have to be. Like, that's not the only way to win going forward, especially if you can build an offense around Evan. Let's go with Eric in Akron. Eric, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Living the dream, buddy. What you got for us?
I just disagree wholeheartedly, Nick. I'll give you an example about usage rate and your NBA rating that you posed there, you thought about. Ty Jerome was great, up for sixth man of the year in the regular season. The minute he got more usage because Garland went down, he went to crap. He could barely dribble the ball. I'm scared that if we start using Mobley more, he's just going to get planned for and exposed. I like Evan Mobley. I think he's a good player. I just don't think he's a guy you build around.
I will say, I think there's a difference in Ty Jerome, who was a late first-round pick and a tweener player, than a guy who has got every toolbox you want in the toolbox, every tool in the toolbox.
But Ty Jerome was a needed player on our team. He's bigger. He's in the backcourt. He was a needed player. Even late first-round, lots of late first-round players bloom into something special. He just didn't do it this year. I don't know. His defensive efficiency drops when Jared Allen's out. Like, I just have a lot of issues with Mobley that I just haven't seen it where he's the guy you build the franchise around.
Eric, we appreciate you, buddy. Thank you so much. I will say, I don't think the Ty Jerome comparison's fair. Also, Ty shouldn't be your starting point guard. What happened to Ty in the playoffs is the same thing that happened to Tyler Hero, where all of a sudden, Ty Jerome had to be your lead playmaker offensively. He's a backup point guard at best. Like that's, and which by the way, not even his main role. His main role is play with one of the other playmakers and get shots. And then the secondary role is creating shots for other people. I think a totally different game in my opinion. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's again, we talk about usage rate. Ty Jerome with the fourth highest usage rate. That shouldn't happen. There's a reason why Atkinson benched him for the first half of the last game, though. Like, this is not, we don't need to relitigate what happened with Ty Jerome in the postseason. That was a disaster.
216-474-0092. Are you okay making a move that shortens the Cavs' window, even if that means making a move on Evan Mobley and win in Paris in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Nerds. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.